So my topic for this evening, by request, is the matter of the person, or we used to say personage, goes by the name of Acharya. What is an Acharya? What is the importance of Acharya? How do you get an Acharya? How do you become an Acharya? All those topics we hope to we cover this evening. It's a big assignment, but I think we can do it with a little help from Shastra. I'm going to start from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'm now at the Adi Lila chapter 7. And in the context here in this chapter, the discussion is how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was able to preach to all kinds of the fallen student class, the logicians, the Mayavadis, and so on. And they were all offenders in various ways. But the text says, this is text number 7, it says that Lord Chaitanya, so I got a little machine here and there's a machine there, so we're loaded with machines. Yeah, it's there. It's just subtle. Lord Chaitanya excused them all. That's all these types of offenders. And they merged into the ocean of devotional service. For no one can escape the unique loving network, Prema Mahajale, of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Prabhupada's purport says, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was an ideal Acharya. Now he will explain what this means. An Acharya is an ideal teacher who knows the purport of the revealed scriptures. That's one. Two, behaves exactly according to their instructions. And three, teaches his students to adopt these principles also. So that's a pretty good list, huh? Doesn't just know the scripture, but the purport of the revealed scriptures. Behaves exactly according to their injunctions. And teaches his students to adopt these principles also. Then Prabhupada expands now in this purport on this last point. As an ideal Acharya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu devised ways to capture all kinds of atheists and materialists. Every Acharya has a specific means of propagating his spiritual movement with the aim of bringing men to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, the method of one Acharya may be different from that of another, but the ultimate goal is never neglected. So here's the other important point. These three things are there, knowing the purport of the scripture, acting according to their injunctions, and then teaching others to adopt the same principles. Now, when it comes to teaching others, one has to devise. So on the one hand, a certain level of strong allegiance or conformity to principles of Shastra, but on the other hand, this ability to devise the ways to do the last part, to teach his students to adopt these principles also, because Prabhupada says every Acharya has a specific means of propagating his spiritual movement, because the kind of people that will become the students are different times and places. They're different. So one has to, at this point, become creative, or to use a special buzzword, innovative, sometimes, in order to do this, part. So here's also a part of the meaning of Acharya. you know that the basic it has this achara means behavior, and so the root meaning, the base meaning is one who teaches by behavior. That doesn't just speak, but what the scripture says, but exemplifies it. So you can say is exemplary person. But when we especially talk about acharyas, or the great acharyas, those who, as an example, they have found some way of teaching or spreading Krishna consciousness that becomes a standard for others to follow after them. So they are paradigmatic people. Not everyone is always able to figure out how to devise the ways and the means of preaching at a certain time or place. We're going to discuss how this happens, how one can do this, because as Bob Dylan said, the times they are changing. That's always true, that's why there's a succession of acharyas who are on the one hand to be absolutely faithful to the teachings of the scriptures, and at the same time bring those forward into different circumstances and to set the standard of preaching for everyone. So Prabhupada says the method of one acharya may be different from another, but the ultimate goal is never neglected. And then Prabhupada says Sri Rupa Goswami recommended but actually, he quotes two different verses here. It's not the same. Not the same text. Kasmatinapi upayena mana Krishna nivesaya. One should fix his mind on Krishna by any means. Notice this: by any means. You should find the means by which people can fix their mind on Krishna. And then he quotes. Then he quotes as though it's really another verse. Sarve vidhi nisheda asyur etayo eva kinkaraha. All the rules and regulations are simply the servants of these two, meaning always remember Krishna, never forget him. So one should fix his mind on Krishna by any means. An acharya should devise a means by which people may somehow or other come to Krishna consciousness. So that's specifically in the name of an exemplary or paradigmatic person is this that's the acharya. And then Prabhupada talks about his own mission, because he had to do that. First they should become Krishna conscious, and then all the prescribed rules and regulations may later gradually be introduced. In other words, you cannot sometimes. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we follow this policy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he had to figure out how to attract people who were. And then he goes on to say, for example, since boys and girls in the Western countries freely intermingle, special concessions regarding their customs and habits are necessary to bring them to Krishna consciousness. See, here Prabhupada was being criticized very much, because in India there's a very strict separation, and in a mod, in a temple, it was only sannyasis and brahmacharis. There were no women whatsoever. Certainly no single women. This was unheard of. But Prabhupada had this thing called the Brahmacharini Ashram and so on. And Prabhupada did other things. As he said, the acharya must devise a means to bring them to devotional service. Therefore, although I am a sannyasi, I sometimes take part in getting boys and girls married. Although in the history of sannyas, no sannyasi has personally taken part in marrying his disciples. So Prabhupada did these things. And then the next text says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in order to deliver the fallen souls. Therefore, he devised many means, many methods to liberate them from the clutches of Maya. So Prabhupada continues this theme about the Acharya, his creative work or innovative work. It is the concern of the Acharya to show mercy to the fallen souls. In this connection, Desha Kala Patra, the place, the time, and the object should be taken into consideration. Since European and American boys and girls in our Krishna conscious movement preach together, less intelligent men criticize that they are mingling without restriction. This was his God brothers and so on in the Gaudiya Mat. I'll just finish reading what he says. In Europe, America, boys and girls mingle unrestrictedly and have equal rights. Therefore, it is not possible to completely separate the men from the women. However, we are thoroughly instructing both men and women how to preach, and actually, they are preaching wonderfully. Of course, we strictly prohibit illicit sex. Boys and girls who are not married are not allowed to sleep together or live together. Generally, there are separate arrangements for boys and girls in every temple. So it goes on here. And so on. The result of this are wonderful. Both men and women are preaching the gospel of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Krishna with redoubled strength. In the verse, the words, takes a little section, indicate that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to deliver one and all. Therefore, it is a principle that preachers must strictly follow the rules and regulations laid down in the Shastras, and yet at the same time devise a means by which the preaching work to reclaim the fallen souls may go on with full force. So here's like, he emphasizes these two sides of the same thing. Strictly following the rules and regulations, and at the same time devise so it seems contradictory. One of the conclusions that I've come to about spiritual life in general, that to be successful in spiritual life, you must be able to do what seems like contradictory things at the same time. Must be very conservative and very liberal, for example. as you see here. People who just follow the rules and regulations very, very rigidly, they usually don't have the capacity to be creative and innovative. And some people who are creative and innovative, they forget the basis of the thing and they concoct so many things. So to be successful, you have to get these two seemingly contradictory things together. And this is one of the characteristics of the Acharya. Now, how do we do this? Anyway, so we've seen these characters are there. He knows the purport, follows them himself, and teaches others. And in this, the teaching means that it has to be effective teaching. What does it mean to say that he knows, not just that he knows the scriptures, it's not a matter of repeating them with a good memory, which a tape recorder can do, or certain kinds of birds, but knows the purport. This is what we mean by realized knowledge. To know the purport, and there's a famous verse from the Svetashvatara Upanishad. Yasya Devi Pura Bhaktir, how we realize the purport. Because in this verse from the Svetashvatara Upanishad, the artha means purport. Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tatta gura tasyaite katita hi artha prakashante mahatmanah. So to those mahatmas, their characteristic that they have para bhakti to the Lord, to Deva, to the Lord, and in the same degree as to the Lord, also to the Guru. Yata deve tata gura. Yes, prabhakti, both equally. To that person who has this devotion, Prabhupada translated as implicit faith, prabhakti, is transcendental or supreme devotion. To that person, the artha, the purports of these katita, these discussions, means the Svaitasrutara Upanishad specifically. See, this is the very last verse in the Upanishad. So you've read the whole text, and now how do I understand it? And then it tells you. So when it refers to these discussions, this katita, the artha, prakashante means it will shine forth, it will be revealed, so that the understanding, the meaning of shastra, it is like receiving from shastra a revelation, and you have to be in the right condition to do that. There's a saying in German. I don't remember the German. Actually, it's Austrian. A book is like a mirror. If an ass looks in, no angel will look out. So the shastra may have all kinds of things in there. So it's like an angel, but if we're asses, we won't see what's there. We'll see our own reflection, unfortunately. So one has to be in this condition. To have this parabhakti means one thing is that you have understood the purport. This prabhakti means that, or implicit faith, that you do follow the orders of the Lord. You follow the orders of the Lord. You follow the orders of the spiritual master. It's talking about bhakti. So Prabhupada once said in a class, he said, "Where is the proof that you love Krishna? If you love Krishna, you'll follow his orders." And the similar thing, if you love the spiritual master, you'll follow his orders. Now, we see many people that apparently love Srila Prabhupada or love Krishna, but rather conspicuously, sometimes they don't follow their orders. Yet they cry real tears and so on. But Prabhupada, I wanted to say that there was a proof of this love, that you follow the orders. So that's what. Otherwise, I guess there you could say there's some sentiment, some feeling may be there, but real love means you that is there. So the one of the things about being the acharya is that you follow the previous acharya or acharyas and the essential instructions. Now I want to go on and look at another text. I don't know if I can. This is in the first canto. The text is talking about Sutta Goswami, who's meeting at the sages of Naimisharanya Forest. And they're very enlivened because he is now going to recite to them Srimad Bhagavatam. Because when Bhagavatam made its first public appearance was when Sukadeva Goswami narrated it to Maharaj Pariksit. And Sukadeva Goswami was in the audience and he heard it. And so now he is going to re-present it to the sages at Naimisharanya Forest. And so this gives Prabhupada occasion to make some very important points. So the text is, this is the last text of the third chapter, O learned Brahmanas, here's the Sutta is speaking. When Shukadeva Goswami recited Bhagavatam there in the presence of Emperor Pariksit, I heard him with rapt attention, and thus by his mercy, I learned the Bhagavatam from that great and powerful sage. Now I shall try to make you hear the very same thing as I learned it from him and as I have realized it. So this word here, yata mati, yata aditam, yata mati, as I have realized it, as far as my realization goes. So that the discussion of that, what it means to have realization, really occurs in the purport of the next verse, which is the beginning of the next chapter. On hearing Sutta Goswami speak, thus Shaunaka Muni, who was the elderly learned leader of all the rishis engaged in that prolonged sacrificial ceremony, congratulated Sutta Goswami by addressing him as follows. So it says that Shaunaka stood up to congratulate Sri Sutta Goswami when he expressed his desire to present Srimad Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it from Shukadeva Goswami and also realized it personally. So notice there's two things. He's going to present it exactly as he had heard it and also realized it personally. And in the previous purport, Prabhupada says that when the full realization of Bhagavatam is that you see Krishna directly in the pages. So now Prabhupada discusses about realization. Personal realization does not mean that one should, out of vanity, attempt to show one's own learning by trying to surpass the previous acharya. He must have full confidence in the previous acharya. And at the same time, he must realize the subject matter so nicely that he can present the matter for the particular circumstances in a suitable manner. The original purpose of the text must be maintained. No obscure meaning should be screwed out of it. Yet, it should be presented in an interesting manner for the understanding of the audience. This is called realization. So this is a very far out discussion, especially if you spend a lot of time with academics where you read texts. And the first thing you want to do is to show one's learning by surpassing your teachers. You try to show that they're wrong and that they have written about this and they blew it and now you're going to set them right, you know. This is not just academic. No one is considered to be an expert or a learned person unless they disagree with everyone, all the others. So, including the previous acharyas. You remember the famous occasion in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where One teacher approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with his commentary on the Bhagavatam, Balabhavata, and said that that he showed that Sridhar Swami was wrong, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not hear it. So one does not try to surpass the previous acharyas. And Prabhupada says that out of vanity, show one's learning. Now, this is the academic game, you know, the razzle dazzle, and show off your learning. And as you said, screwing some obscure meaning. you like to say that now in this text. Look at this text. Here's what's here, and the strange thing is, this has been hitherto unnoticed by everybody. Strangely enough, no one has noticed this till now. Right? This is not our idea. The idea is that the previous acharyas should be followed. Yet, one can present the matter in a particular circumstances in a suitable manner. It will come out maybe in your own language, in your own words, in your own style, but it will be completely faithful at the same time to what the previous acharyas have said. In order to do like this, one must have somehow or other taken it in, assimilated, made its one own, and with complete fidelity, it comes out again. And although it can be sound very, very different, it's actually unchanged. Anybody who has ever tried to read the writings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he really did, at least in his English, I don't know what his Bengali is like, But his English is extremely difficult to follow. Very, very big words, very complicated. You have to sit and read each sentence six or seven times before you think you understand what he means. And so I did this, you know. I'm used to stuff like that sometimes. And then I would finally figure out what he was saying, and I found out that I'd already heard the same thing from Srila Prabhupada in completely different language. and I could see why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was speaking like that, because he really forced you to pay attention. I mean, you really had to give your undivided attention to what he made it difficult for a reason. But when Prabhupada came to a different audience, that obviously wouldn't work, and his way of presenting it, which was amazing clarity and simplicity of language. When I first read his commentary in the Isha Upanishad, I realized that I was in the presence of a really extremely sophisticated theology. I was in the third year of graduate school. My field of study was theology and religious thought. You know, so I was reading Hegel and Shankaracharya and you know, Paul Tillich, and I mean all these theologians, Thomas Aquinas and everything. So, you know, I was pretty well trained in plowing through these people. Extremely sophisticated and high level theologians, and here Prabhupada was speaking something that addressed what I concerned to be the central problems of theology, and it was the best thing I'd ever seen. It made everybody else look like an amateur, and yet Prabhupada did it in this extraordinarily simple English. No big words, no elaborate constructions. It was amazing to see that. So you can get an idea from that about this capacity that's there with realized knowledge. So But the essential component to have this realized knowledge is this ability to strictly follow. In the previous verse of here, this is really the condition of parampara. Parampara is the transmission of scripture. The literal meaning of parampara is one after another. And the idea is that knowledge is originally given. It originates in Krishna or in the Lord, and he presents it to somebody else who hears it properly and passes it down one after another. And Prabhupada claims that it is unchanged. 5,000 years unchanged. This academics have such a hard time with this because they don't believe it's true. And even we have a hard time of it because, you know, we have this telephone game or message game we all played in grade school where you're all sitting in a circle and the teacher, you know, whispers something into one person's ear, and by the time it goes around one after another, it comes totally distorted. And people think, well, maybe parampara is like this. But here he's saying how it actually remains the same. And even though it may seem to change according to time, place, and circumstance, and sometimes you have to change to remain the same. I can give you a crude example. Say you're flying an airplane and you stay on the same compass heading, but sometimes you're on the right bank of the river and sometimes you're on the left bank of the river. So from one point of view, you don't change. From the other side, you're going this side to that side and this side to that side. So something like that. But the idea of parampara is that it is realized knowledge, and what is passed down through parampara is the substance of spiritual experience. Ultimately, the word realization means vijnana, that there is actual experience of the truth of what you are hearing or understanding. So that the hearing of a text or the reading of a text or the listening to a spiritual master or an acharya is not an ordinary event. And therefore, in the purport to the verse before this, Prabhupada gives the conditions under which this realization takes place. First of all, the speaker has to be bona fide. Here, I'll just go through this purport. I heard him with rapt attention, Sukadeva Goswami says. Now I'm going to make you hear the same thing as I learned it from him and I have realized it. And Prabhupada begins by the purport. One can certainly see directly the presence of Lord Krishna in the pages of Bhagavatam if one has heard it from a self-realized great soul like Sukadeva Goswami. So this is the experience of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, at least full realization, is that Krishna is seen directly in the pages. So how does this happen? Well, one cannot learn Bhagavatam from a bogus higher reciter whose aim of life is to earn some money from such recitation and employ their earning in sex indulgence. No one can learn the Srimad Bhagavatam is associated with persons engaged in sex life. This means people who are good actors or good storytellers. Who, I've seen them. They narrate Srimad Bhagavatam. The whole audience is in tears. But the persons is how they earn their living. by this, like an actor earning a living, and they themselves are not following the principles. Sometimes talent can take the place of realization, at least for a while. But the real thing is, one has to learn Bhagavatam from people who are strictly following, as he's saying here. Nor can one learn Bhagavatam from one who interprets the text by his mundane scholarship. Another way. One has to learn Bhagavatam from the representative of Shukadeva Goswami and no one else if one wants to see Lord Sri Krishna in the pages. That is the process. There is no alternative. Sudha Goswami is a bona fide representative of Shukadeva Goswami because he wants to present the message which he received from the great learned Brahmana. Shukadeva Goswami presented Bhagavatam as he heard it from his great father, and so all Sudha Goswami is presenting Bhagavatam as he heard it from Shukadeva Goswami. So there it is. See, there's the idea of parampara. Vyasadeva, Shukadeva Goswami, Sudha Goswami. It's being passed down in this way. Simple hearing is not all. One must realize the text with proper attention. So, to hear it, one must be hearing it from someone who himself was a proper hearer. The word Nivishta meant that Sudha Goswami drank the juice of Bhagavatam through his ears. This is the real process of receiving Bhagavatam. One should hear with rapt attention from the real person. And then he can at once realize the presence of Lord Krishna in every page. The secret of knowing Bhagavatam is here. In other words, there's a mystery about this. An esoteric aspect of Bhagavatam, by which it is not just like memorizing a sentence and repeating it without distortion. It's something more. That there's a spiritual substance that's being transferred and conveyed through the parampara. The secret of knowing Bhagavatam. No one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. No one can be pure in mind who's not pure in action. No one can be pure in action who's not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. So that's the qualification. We said the acharya is someone who is strictly following the instructions of Shastra. Because this is the existential condition for being able to receive and realize the meaning of the text, where the purport shines forth. Is illuminating. We can sit down, all of us have had the experience, we can sit down with Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and some days, our bad days, we look at it and we say, you know, why does Prabhupada keep saying the same thing over and over again? You know, it's boring to read this stuff, and so on. And then another day you can read the same text, and every word is something new and enlivening. And the text is telling us what we need to know. It's not the text that's changed. It's that we are in either proper condition or not proper condition. So the proper condition is that one has to be pure in mind. To be pure in mind, we have to be pure in action. And to be pure in action, he says, pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. That is even the basic biological, instinctive activities of life have to be carried on in a pure way. So you can see that's what Prabhupada at least is trying to train everybody to come to this platform of purity. You could say in some ways he's trying to make a society by which in which Bhagavatam can take place, and the spiritual potency coming from Krishna that goes conveyed to this parampara is actually keeps on going. So now I want to turn to Bhagavatam, because we all recognize Prabhupada as the Acharya. He did devise ways and means, and he managed in his time, to in a very short amount of time, to bring a huge number of people to Krishna consciousness, of a great variety of people. It was an extraordinary effort. Then the question goes, what happens when the Acharya is no longer manifest? How do things go on? This has been the problem that our own movement has faced since the disappearance of Srila Prabhupada. And if we are paying attention to Bhagavatam, we find that Prabhupada has told us exactly what to do. Completely. And he's addressed this issue. And the place he addresses this issue, in particular, is in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 28, which is titled, Paranjana Becomes a Woman in the Next Life. You know, there's this whole allegorical story that Narada Muni tells King Barhismat about this character named Paranjana, the one who lives in the city of nine gates, the embodied soul. Anyway, so it's an allegorical story, and everywhere Prabhupada gives the allegorical meaning, the purport. So in his next life, he became the queen, the daughter of King Vidarbha, so she's called Vidarbhi, and she was married to a king who was a great devotee. She served him very nicely. He retires, he goes to the forest. They practice austerities together like vanaprasthas do. And then he leaves his body. The king leaves his body. So I take up the story here on text 47. Being now alone and a widow in that forest, the daughter of Vidarbha began to lament, incessantly shedding tears, which soaked her breast and crying very loudly. Prabhupada says, figuratively, that is to say in the allegorical meaning of this, the queen is supposed to be the disciple of the king. Thus, when the mortal body of the spiritual master expires, his disciples should cry just exactly as the queen cries when the king leaves his body. However, the disciple and spiritual master are never separated, because the spiritual master always keeps company with the disciple as long as, and as a condition, as long as the disciple follows strictly the instructions of the spiritual master. This is called the association of vani, words. Physical presence is called vapuhu. Means body. As long as the spiritual master is physically present, the disciple should serve the physical body of the spiritual master, and when the spiritual master is no longer physically existing, then the disciple should serve the instructions of the spiritual master. Serving the instructions means follow strictly the instructions. And then he's saying there's no separation in this case. And we'll see how this takes place in this allegory. The queen says, "Oh, best of kings, please get up, get up. Just see, Utishta," she says, "just see this world surrounded by water and infested with rogues and so-called kings. This world is very much afraid, and it is your duty to protect her." So, Prabhupada says, whenever an acharya comes, so here the word is being used in this sense of really a person who sets a precedent for those who follow. Whenever an acharya comes, following the superior orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his representative, he establishes the principles of religion, as enunciated in the Bhagavad Gita. Religion means abiding by the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the definition. Notice how Prabhupada's emphasis here is on following orders. Huh? Religious principles begin from the time one surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is the Acharya's duty to spread a bona fide religious system. Interesting, it doesn't say the, he says a bona fide religious system, and induce everyone to bow down before the Supreme Lord. Whatever is bona fide, this is what it will do. One executes the religious principles by rendering devotional service, specifically the 9 items like hearing, chanting, and remembering. Unfortunately, when the Acharya disappears, rogues and non-devotees take advantage and immediately begin to introduce unauthorized principles in the name of so-called swamis, yogis, philanthropists, welfare workers, and so on. They say something else is religion. It looks like it. Okay. This part about surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is somehow not there. Actually, human life has been for executing the orders of the Supreme Lord, and this is stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Manmana bhavamad bhokto majyai mam namaskaru mame vaishyasi yuktaivam atmanam matparayanaha. Engage your mind. This is his order, right? Always in thinking of me, becoming my devotee. Offer my obeisances and worship me, being completely absorbed in me, surely you shall come to me. The main business of human society is to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead at all times, to become his devotee, to worship the Supreme Lord and bow down before him. The Acharya, the authorized representative of the Supreme Lord, establishes these principles. But when he disappears, things once again become disordered. The perfect disciples of the Acharya try to relieve the situation by sincerely following the instructions of the spiritual master. So there it is again. What does he do? Sincerely follows the instructions of the spiritual master. So then the wife goes on lamenting. Then she prepares a funeral pyre and puts her husband's body on it. And when that was finished, she prepared herself to enter into the fire. Allegorically, this means that a devoted disciple of the spiritual master would rather die with the spiritual master than fail to execute the spiritual master's mission. Because we usually all kill ourselves. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes down upon this earth to reestablish the principles of religion, so his representative, the spiritual master, also comes to reestablish religious principles. It is the duty of the disciples to take charge of the mission of the spiritual master and execute it properly. Otherwise, the disciples should decide to die along with the spiritual master. In other words, to execute the will of the spiritual master, the disciple should be prepared to lay down his life and abandon all personal considerations. So notice, to execute the will of the spiritual master. Again, this emphasis is there from Prabhupada. At this point, but just as she's about to fling herself upon the fire, somebody shows up, stops her. My dear king, one brahmana who was an old friend of King Puranjana, who's the queen in this life, but he's an old friend of Puranjana, came to that place and began to pacify the queen with sweet words. The appearance of an old friend in the form of a brahmana is very significant. What does it mean? in his Paramatma feature, Krishna is the old friend of everyone. So it means Paramatma appears. And then he explains the Paramatma, how he's within the heart of everyone as Surit, the best friend, always eager to having the living entity turn to him, sitting with the living entity as witness. He gives the living entity the chance to enjoy himself materially, but when there's an opportunity, the Lord gives good counsel and advises the living entity to abandon trying to become happy through material adjustment and instead turn his face toward the Supreme Personality of God and surrender to him. Then Prabhupada says, when one becomes serious to follow the mission of the spiritual master, his resolution is tantamount to seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know what the word tantamount means? It means equivalent to. So that's what it is. One becomes serious to follow the mission of the spiritual master, his resolution. As explained before, this means meeting the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the instruction of the spiritual master. This is technically called Vani Seva. Remember he mentioned that before. And remember when we were reading that purport about the Bhagavatam, seeing Krishna in the pages of Bhagavatam? So here's the same thing. In Vani Seva, in the instruction of the spiritual master, equivalent to seeing the super soul. This is technically called Vani Seva. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has stated in his Bhagavad Gita commentary on the verse Vyavasa Admika Bhutir Ekeha Guru Nandana Bhagavatam 2:41 that one should serve the words of the spiritual master. The disciple must stick to whatever the spiritual master orders. Simply by following on this line, one sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is very clearly Prabhupada's realized knowledge. Because he comes back to this, if you start to look for it, you'll find Prabhupada talks about this purport of Vishwanath Chakravarti over and over and over and over again. Because Prabhupada explains in 1968, the disappearance day of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura, he gave a lecture in Los Angeles, and he explained how 30 years before, or 32 years before, 1936, he had written to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, feeling that I'm not doing much service. He was a grahastha doing business in Bombay, not a sannyasi, not a brahmachari in the mat, so he felt he wasn't doing any service. What can I do? And he got a letter back from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who told him, it will be good for you and those that help you if you preach this Krishna consciousness in the English language. That meant, this order, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had famously given to all his big leaders, his sannyasis. It meant go to the West. Bhaktisiddhanta wanted that very, very badly. Prabhupada wasn't the only one to get this order. The thing that astonished Prabhupada is that he got it. Because he was not a sannyasi. He was not free to, you know, pop off to the West. He had a family. He was doing business. So Prabhupada reflects it, and I had no idea what, I couldn't imagine how I would do this. You know, what plans I could make. I couldn't think I would do this or I could do this. He said that but by reading this purport from Vishwanath Chakravarti, he got some inspiration. Because Vishwanath Chakravarti says this, Vyavasa Atmika Buddhi means you should simply accept the order of the spiritual master as your life and soul, and don't care about anything about following that, that order. Forget about being liberated or not liberated, not important. Forget about success and failure, not important. The secret of success is you dedicate yourself to this order. So Prabhupada did it, even though he had no idea exactly how it would come about. And he said, because he did that by Krishna's grace in 1968, now I'm here in Los Angeles, now you've come to me, now we have some foothold, as he put it, of this movement. So for Prabhupada, this purport is very, very significant in his life, because actually that he feels that he was able to become successful because he was given all facility. When he showed up in America, he had nothing. No money, no institutional support, no youthful energy, didn't even have good health, all by himself, and yet, within 11 years, Krishna consciousness was all over the world. How did that happen? In that particular lecture, Prabhupada said, now on this auspicious day of my spiritual master's disappearance, I shall give you the same order he gave me. This is the Parampara system. And what he said was, you should become devotees yourself, and he said you should have some feeling for suffering humanity. In other words, this idea of going to the West is the idea that you just don't worry about your spiritual life, but you give Krishna consciousness to others. We already seen that's the definition of acharya. They teach it to others. They understand the purport of the scriptures, they follow it themselves, and they try to give it to others. And so that's what Prabhupada did. And he also gave us the instruction. He passed it on in a generic form. Become Krishna conscious yourself and give Krishna consciousness to other people. That's his vani. That's his instruction. Same instruction. This is this vani seva. The disciple must stick to whatever the spiritual master orders. Simply by following on that line, one sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is a little interesting comment here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma, appeared before the Queen as a Brahmin. But why didn't he appear in his original form as Sri Krishna? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that unless one is very highly elevated in loving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot see him as he is. Nonetheless, if one sticks to the principle enunciated by the spiritual master, somehow or other, he is in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since the Lord is in the heart, he can advise a sincere disciple from within. So the question comes, how do we know what to do? The acharya is gone. Circumstances are changed. How do we know what's the right way to go? This is part of the realized knowledge that actually the direction has to come from Super Soul in the heart. If one sticks to the principles enunciated by the spiritual master, somehow or other, so it doesn't have to be that you have to see, you know, Krishna's Braj Leela. Nice if we do, but nevertheless, that's not, if you don't, that's not the necessary qualification. One sticks to the principles of the spiritual master, somehow or other he is an association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since the Lord is in the heart, he can advise a sincere disciple from within. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 10:10. Tesham satayuktanam bhajatam kittipurvakam dadami buddhi yogatam yenamam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. In conclusion, if a disciple is very serious to execute the mission of the spiritual master, he immediately associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead by Vani or Vapuhu. This is the only secret of success in seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Instead of being eager to see the Lord in some bush of Vrindavan, while at the same time engaging in sense gratification, if one sticks instead to the principle of following the words of the spiritual master, he will see the Supreme Lord without difficulty. There's the answer. I don't think it's very clear. Prabhupada gives direction. In other words, Prabhupada is the acharya, and what he has now told us is how we can be acharyas. And that's also his desire. There was a famous instruction that Prabhupada, unfortunately I don't know if it, you can find it anymore because it's not in folio. But what happened when Shyama Sundar was Prabhupada's secretary, he used to mail out every month or so a newsletter telling what Prabhupada was doing. And I read them avidly. They were hard to read because Shyama Sundar wrote in a very literary, stream of consciousness sort of manner. And as I later discovered, not very many people waded their way through them. He's very clear. I remember one, he's talking about sleeping outside of Prabhupada's room in the early morning, and it says Prabhupada's keyhole flashed into shape. Means Prabhupada turned the light on in his room and the keyhole, you can see the light. See Prabhupada's keyhole flash in the shape. The stuff like, it was full of stuff like that, you had to quite he would say it like that instead of, I saw the light go on because it's keyhole. But it was, they were quite had so many things. So I read one that Shyama Sundar sent out from Africa. And Prabhupada had just been in London, and he engaged in a debate with the secretary of the Mensa Club, the society. Where Mensa, you have to have a certified IQ of 140 to join. Supposed to be a genius. And Prabhupada defeated the secretary. He actually admitted it to Prabhupada. And so Prabhupada was saying so many things that Shyama Sundar wrote down, and this talking about the Krishna consciousness. Anyway, one thing Prabhupada said, I act like a king because nobody can defeat me. And he said, we have our movement, and this is where he said preaching is the essence. It started like this. Preaching is the essence. Books are the basis. Utility is the principle. And the purity is force. And I read that. I thought, wow, that is great. And I made up a sign, you know, a poster in my office with these, you know, preaching is the essence. Books are the basis. Utility, principle, purity is the force. And I put it up. And then later, Rupa Nuga, my GBC, came to visit me. And he said, wow, that's great. Where'd that come from? And I showed him the new, he hadn't read them, you know, people couldn't wade their way through this. But people, and then people doubt that Prabhupada said it because they can't find it in folio, but that's where it came from. President Rupa Nuga wrote it down, and then it went out all over the place, but it was in Shyama Sundar's newsletter. If you ever want to know where it came from, that's where it came from. So then Shyama Sundar said, Prabhupada said, I act like a king because nobody can defeat me. And then he said, I am one person, Prabhupada said, and see what I have done. So this must have been 71 or 72. I forgot the exact date. I could find out. He said, now I am one person and see what I have done. And then he says, now we are 500, which I assume at that time that was his number of initiated disciples. Then he said, now each of you become just like me and imagine what can be accomplished. So I also took that as, this is what his order. You become just like me. And it's not inaccessible. I have later heard people say things as though they're saying something pious. We can't be like Prabhupada. He said, you become like me. And as far as what Prabhupada thought he was doing, well, I remember listening to one tape where Prabhupada was talking to is being glorified by a gentleman, an Indian gentleman, who is praising Prabhupada as a miracle worker. You've created a miracle. And then Prabhupada said, no, I'm not a magician. I haven't done anything so miraculous. And then Prabhupada was quiet for a moment. Then he said, only one thing is to my credit. He said, I have always remained the servant. I have never tried to become the master. So all he's asking us is we remain the servant. That's really the strictly following the instructions. That's what it means to be the servant. And so if one does that, one will be in a position to actually have realized knowledge and to receive guidance from the super soul. And be able to transmit the message of Krishna consciousness as it is with its full potency. Maybe the means and the ways and the means will necessarily be different. The old ways and means will not always work, because you know, things are changing. So how can we be sure we're doing the right thing? That is not simply by applying some formula, but it's by actually acting as Prabhupada instructs us to do, by this Vani Seva. And this way, one fills all the requirements. Once you fill all the requirements that is in the Acharya. And so the necessity is always there that there should be Acharyas present. Acharyas show by their example. One thing is, without the... Prabhupada gave us this idea of pure devotional service. And one would have thought that it's unattainable. But then one met Srila Prabhupada. And there it was. If you don't have some living examples around, it becomes very, very... You think it can't be done. Just like, you know, if you want to master a musical instrument... And you sit, you know, you pick up your violin for the first time or your guitar, and you can't do anything. But then somebody who knows it, who your teacher, you know, then they do it. Otherwise, you think it was not possible, and of course, they make it look easy. As the nature of mastery is that something that's very difficult looks very easy. But without seeing somebody do it, how are you ever going to inspire to think it can be done? So in any field, you need somebody who's really adept and very excellent at what they do to inspire you to also do that. Now, we can't always be violinists, we can't always become physicists, we can't always become, on so many material level, we may not have the qualification. But as far as the qualification for devotional service, actually... Everyone can become qualified. In this case, this is truly democratic, because it is not based on anything material. But there has to be something we need to do, but that is within our. Anyway, Prabhupada never said that he never told anybody you can't become a devotee. He never said to anybody, no, nope, you're too fallen. So we should remember that, and see that also this parampara needs to go on. And Prabhupada did so much work, he very clearly is very eager to see that it continued. So in this way we have to remain his servants, make sure that there are still acharyas around who can keep this parampara alive by these things that Prabhupada has outlined here. Understand the purport of the scriptures, follow the instructions strictly, and find the ways to give Krishna consciousness to other people. And do those things, and all facility will be given by Krishna. All the yoga shema, all the spiritual and material facility will come. Any questions? Interesting how we know what to do. There's no mystery about it in some way.
Become like Prabhupada.
Huh?
Become like
Prabhupada. Become like Prabhupada, yeah. Uh-huh.
You started off by talking about how sometimes we have to live in contradictions.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time we have to understand what Prabhupada is saying and mm-hmm. follow what he's saying. And mm-hmm. it seems like there's so many factors and so many things we have to balance.
Yeah, well, it cannot be figured out on the mental platform, huh? Mm-hmm. It cannot be figured out on the mental platform. Yeah. That's a fact. But here, this ability to be completely faithful to the tradition, at the same time innovate when necessary, with correct judgment. It's clear that you cannot simply give a some kind of material formula. But we have to have the intelligence, and the Dhammi Buddhiyodhanam, I give the intelligence by which they can come to me. And for us, that also means the intelligence by which we can bring other people to Krishna too. Because that's our particular mission. That's what Krishna wants. So Krishna can enable us to do these things. Yeah.
I don't exactly how to ask this. You were saying, from Srila Prabhupada, and how the spiritual the disciples sees Krishna in the instruction of the spiritual master.
Hmm. Yeah, I can get his exact words up here.
Yeah.
It means meeting the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the instruction of the spiritual master. This is technically called Bani Seva.
Could you give some personal realization of this? How you know maybe as having served Srila Prabhupada over so many decades, how your realization of Krishna has increased?
If I'm rightly situated in Krishna consciousness, and to me that. I think this, I haven't been successful in being rightly situated every day. But when one is rightly situated in Krishna consciousness, it's very clear. And the rightly situated in Krishna consciousness means, there's a lot of things you have to do, maybe, to be rightly situated. But one should be, one characteristic that I want to talk about is that one is very eager to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, so that one is really wants to know very badly, what do I have to do to advance in Krishna consciousness? Just as though you're a businessman, how eager you are and you've got some enterprise going, and you know if I just do the next right things, you know, I'll become successful and I'll become really rich. And how eager you are to really concentrate your mind and figure out just to do the right thing, so, you know, if I just make the right steps and don't blow it, you know, money will come like crazy. And you get a little obsessed if you're in that kind of a position. So in the same way, once you become somewhat obsessed in Krishna consciousness, we're eager to do the right thing to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. And then you discover that that Krishna is telling you what to do. You open a book and you read it. You overhear a conversation. You hear somebody saying it. I mean, the book means Bhagavatam or something, a spiritual book. Hear what a devotee is saying, or happen to listen to a lecture. It happens, and it becomes not subtle. It becomes really, really obvious, and it becomes very clear that then you get what looks like intuitions, ideas of what Krishna wants you to do, or how to do it, and it's clear that what you read in a book is what's coming from your heart. And so then you can feel what it's like that I am receiving instructions from the Super Soul. And so this happens. You take that step, and then he'll tell you what the next step is. You take, of course, sometimes the next step, then you look at it and you go, I know about that too. But one has to be engaged, you know, really, really engaged in this way. You have to be right there, you know, very alert. The way professional football players are, get when they're in a really great game, or the way a soldier gets in the battlefield, I mean, you get really very alert. One has to be like that about Krishna consciousness. And you feel them. It's great. So in some way, there's some experience like that. And you do something, and then suddenly things fall into place. Right? You want to do something, and suddenly resources become available. Things fall into place. And certainly Prabhupada had that experience when he came to America. I mean, it wasn't that he wasn't tested, because right at first things didn't seem to fall into place, but he persisted. Prabhupada even said that he used to go and look and see when the ships are going to return to India, you know, just in case he had to go back, and then things just started to fall into place. People started to show up. He asked people to go out and do something, and suddenly it became a success, you know, and the facility was there. Okay. Yeah.
For someone who's works during the day doing work that's not directly Krishna related, then do you think it's correct that unless someone is like a super advanced soul, then probably that's the time when it's going to be harder for him to remember the order of the spirit monster, hard to remember Krishna, hard to see what he's doing as Krishna service, and compared to, say, the time when he's associating with devotees at a program or chanting his japa, etc. And he should obviously try. But.
Yeah, it's a challenge. Yeah, sure. It's just like Prabhupada, but he was doing business. He wasn't living in an ashram. He wasn't. But once he got the order and took it seriously, he continued to do business. This is 1936. You know, and he continued to do business up until 1954. But he was certainly, everything he did was working toward that goal. I mean, in 1944 he started writing in English, you know, working on his English and printing the Back to Godhead magazine in English, and trying to preach to Indians who were, as they say, English knowing, and so on. And he tried, you know, so he really did. He really was quite active, doing whatever he could do. And sometimes, you know, you remember that Krishna is in charge of timing. Suppose Prabhupada had showed up in America in 1954. I remember 1954. You know, he came at just the right time. It was all set up for him. And so these things you have to depend upon Krishna what the timing is. But I think he took it very, very seriously. And so the main thing is just to do everything we can to stay in the proper condition. You know, for devotees who are working outside, you know, there's no the problem in every case is really not having the association of devotees. It's not really the work itself. It's not having the association of devotees. Yeah, right. And so therefore, it would seem to me that all of the people who are doing like that, obviously one proximate goal should try to get into working associations where you can work with devotees. So you have to pray to Krishna to make you an entrepreneur. So you can start businesses or help where devotees can work together. That'll make it easier. One can have association, I think we can make some progress in that way, and it may take some time, but that's really something to work for. We can't do it ourselves. At least the next people that come along will be even better situated. So that's one thing. It's really the association of devotees, and it's really working with non-devotees. And also, it doesn't have to be all devotees, but it's either devotees or those people who are sympathetic, vegetarians, you know, many things like that. The office spaces are all smoke-free now. Something has happened. hasn't. And now people are beginning to make noises. I just something came out. I guess in Lancet, the first medical journal of England, they had just had an article in Lancet about the fact that alcohol is more dangerous to people's health than smoking. So that's like the real issue with smoking, is dangerous to people's health. Alcohol is even worse. And that's not even talking about things like automobile fatalities, murders, and so on. It's just talking about what it does to your body. You know, so people, sooner or later, you know, there's going to be it's starting that alcohol is becoming less and less acceptable. It really has. I mean, it used to be in the 50s, you know, the whole Senate of the United States was drunk while they conduct their business. Nobody thought anything of it. Now they have to get drunk later. but my father was in, the whole military runs on alcohol. The whole government was running on alcohol, you know. Oh, yeah. Things are changing. Yeah.
You were speaking about this Prabhupada receiving this order.
Yeah.
From Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura. And I remember reading, when I first read sort of a biographical sketch of Prabhupada, mm-hmm. it said something to the effect of, you know, on the order of his spiritual master he came to the West, or something like mm-hmm. something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember when I actually read Lilamrita, I remember feeling almost, in that naive sort of way, almost a little disappointed that there wasn't a more dramatic order. That it wasn't like, you know, I single you out,
yeah.
and you are the one who's going to go, and I want you to take this ship
yeah.
to New York.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, you know, as sort of reflecting on and very much in the way that you were explaining, it seems only appropriate that the order should be kind of the principle is given, the desire of the spiritual master is revealed, and then Srila Prabhupada just exercised so much creativity, so much judgment, so much of his own innovative and really his own personal realization, like you know, this famous idea that Prabhupada says generally they all go to London, but I from the beginning wanted to come to New York. So it just seems to me that sometimes we have, I know personally, I have a very kind of hackneyed notion of what an order of the spiritual master is supposed to be. That it's supposed to be this kind of dramatic, you know, you do this.
Yeah, you see too much television. When I was a kid, we used to watch these Bible movies, you know. Like, you know, everybody, you didn't know what a doubt about who Jesus was, you know, because there's always a soundtrack. And, you know, it was like, it wasn't like that. Yeah, you know, it is something to think about this order, that it wasn't exclusively given to Prabhupada. Unless you really know the history, it's hard to understand why Prabhupada was so astonished, because Bhakti Siddhanta, he told a lot of people, anyone who had basically any brains, any capacity, he told them to go. He really, really wanted it. And so Prabhupada was surprised that he was told too. But he took it seriously. In the event, nobody else came. As it really turned out, even though many other people had the order, and many other people would have looked like they were in a better position to come, they did not come. Why is it that the only person that did it was Srila Prabhupada? Well, we know. Actually, there was an attempt in the 30s. Somebody went to. Bhakti Siddhanta was very unhappy with the outcome of that, because he sent money to England. Can you imagine from India sending money? Well, there was a donation from whatever the Maharaj was that Bhakti Siddhanta used to be a secretary. So these guys had, you know, rooms piled full of gems in those days. So there was enough money sent to England to build a temple in London.
Oh, wow.
And there's no temple. The money disappeared. He came back, and there's no temple. And according to Prabhupada, Bhakti Siddhanta wouldn't see him when he came back. And according to Prabhupada, the money was spent to buy this Oriental Institute across the street from us. So it was not actually very pleasing. Yeah, this is actually the history of the thing. Nobody went, even though the order was given. So Prabhupada has made the claim. I can show you some places.
Okay, hang on, look it up. If I can find it. Prabhupada
has made the claim with the clear understanding of how you could doubt this claim. How you can doubt this claim that he's the only one who understood his spiritual master. Out of all of his godbrothers, he was the only one who stood it. And the basis for that is actually he's the only one who actually did it. What Bhakti Siddhanta actually wanted. I found some places. I don't know if I can find it now, or I've got it stashed somewhere on this computer. Oh yeah, I think here it is, maybe. Let's see. Prabhupada. Whatever it may be, this is the position. Those who are neophyte they are always in danger. Therefore, it is their duty to be guided by Sadhu, Shastra, Guru. That's all. Now, I'll say from my practical life, it is not pride. You think you could say this. Actually, everyone knows that my Guru Maharaj had thousands of disciples. So out of thousands of cycles, practically, I am little successful. That everyone knows. Why? That everyone knows. Why? And why am I successful? Because I firmly believed in the words of my Guru. That's all. This is the main secret. There may be many other God brothers, maybe very learned, very advanced, whatever it may be, favored. Now, everyone claims I am the most favored. And practical point of view, well, so I think that sometimes why this wonderful thing has happened to me. So I searched out. I searched out only that I 100% believed in the words of my spiritual master. That's all. Nothing else. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chittete Koriya Aikya Arno Koriya Mane Asha. Don't think of any nonsense. Simply execute what your Guru has said. That is success. You are daily singing Guru Mukha Padma Vakya. You know the meaning? Prithipuchu says, yes. Chittete Koriya Aikya Arno Koriya Mane Asha. This is the instruction. And the child decides it. That whatever my parents say, that's I shall do. I shall do nothing. Then he's safe. Then he's safe. And as soon as he manufactures, finished. Do this. Yasya Devi Parabhaktir Yuta Deve Tatai Gurau Tashaiti Katita. This is the secret of spiritual success. Vrindavan, there are so many dangerous, all these Babajis. Oh, I am not going out of Vrindavan. But he has got connection with so many women, so what's the use? Have you experienced this? He's attached to women and doing all sinful activities in Vrindavan, and he's a devotee. He cannot go out of Vrindavan. This is going on, manufacturing bidi, smoking bidi. We'll go on. Anyway, yeah. So there he says the same thing. You notice how Prabhupada got an enormous amount of consistency. He goes on a little bit about these Babaji's. So we have to be guided by our predecessor Acharya, then we shall be saved, otherwise we are condemned. So that's what he said. Everyone thinks he's most favored and so on, but he said practically, I figure why this happened to me and to no one else? And Prabhupada then decided, well, it's because I actually took this order very, very seriously. And you can understand that order was spread around. So it's actually better this way. So now we know. And that's in a way why we very much stress following Srila Prabhupada now, even though other God brothers or their disciples are passing around and everything. But here's something that's transmitted to us from Srila Prabhupada, and we want to stick firmly to what he has understood in this way. Anything else? But now we all know what to do. No question about it. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Ravindra Swarup Prabhu ki jai.